Good morning. I'm going to start by discussing women veterans' definitions and experiences of combat in Iraq and Afghanistan. I wanted to start with an understanding of where the female veteran is coming from and what their experiences were like before we can move on to how to help them post-deployment. So here are my disclosures. I have no personal financial relationships and no relationships to disclose. Here are some learning objectives, things that I'd like you to get out of this presentation. So I'm hoping that at the end of this, you'll be able to define combat as it's described by female women veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan, and also describe the types of combat experiences that they describe in Iraq and Afghanistan. So here's a bit of background. You all know by now that women are playing an increasing role in American war. Women now make up about 14.5% of active duty troops and about 18% of reserve component troops. Further, this number is growing. There's about 20% of new recruits are female. And although the total number of veterans is going to decline over the next 20 years, the percentage of female veterans is going to rise. So this population is going to continue to grow. Furthermore, not only is women's role in American war increasing, but women's exposure to combat is increasing. Women are more exposed to combat in Iraq and Afghanistan than they have been in any previous conflict. This is from a lot of different reasons. One, there's a higher percentage of women in the military. In these conflicts, there's been an increased use of reserve component troops, and women make up a higher percentage of reserve component troops than active duty troops. And the nature of war has changed. There's no longer a front line or an area that's safe or not safe where we can sequester female troops. There's a guerrilla-style nature of war. Danger comes from any direction, any 360 degrees. Furthermore, y'all may have heard there are some recent policy shifts that may allow women to enter ground combat forces for the first time. So the branches are still trying to figure out how to integrate women into troops, but women are getting an increasing exposure to combat. Now, the rates of women's exposure to combat in Iraq and Afghanistan vary because it depends on the definition of combat and the sample. One study showed that males and females have an approximately equal chance of ever experiencing combat. That's experiencing any sort of combat situation. Males and females are on equal footing there. Other studies show that female veterans experience combat of Iraq and Afghanistan experience combat at rates between 45% and 75%, and this is 2008 and 2011. So we don't know exactly how much it is because the definitions vary, but we know they're experiencing it in one way or another. So the purpose of this is to find out what are the ways. So we have little qualitative understanding of women's experiences of combat. We know that they're experiencing it, but we don't know what that means for them. There's some stress research that indicates that men and women may respond to stress differently, both behaviorally and physiologically. This is sort of new research that's coming out that's describing that the response to stress is nuanced and it's not as straightforward as flight or fight would make you believe. Furthermore, combat up until this point has been measured using male veterans' perceptions of combat experience, which may not be accurate for female veterans. So that's why it's important to look at this. So here are my research questions. One, how do female veterans define combat and combat? What a combat veteran is? What are the experiences that they describe as combat? When you ask them what their combat experiences were, what sort of experiences did they tell you about? And what were their responses to combat? What were their thoughts and feelings? This was mixed methods, but primarily qualitative. And I used two survey instruments, the Combat Experiences Scale and the Post-Battle Experiences Scale from the Deployment Risk and Resiliency Inventory. I also used semi-structured in-depth interviews with female veterans utilizing an interview guide. I had 12 female veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan. I also had 5 male veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan as a comparison group. They were recruited from the VA in East Orange. They included both active duty and reserve component troops, and they included female Navy, Air Force, and Army veterans, all who had a variety of roles. They were communications, transportation, military police, logistics, and finance. So they performed a bunch of different roles while they were in the military, none in ground combat, obviously. The participants were also African American, Asian or Pacific Islander, Hispanic, and Caucasian. So I had a little bit of a mix. I recruited and conducted all the interviews. I did all the transcription and data analysis. I used Atlas TI's software for coding and organization. And it was coded using a coding frame that was developed from the interview guide. So now, here are the results, the things that you're interested in. So, this is the description of the sample. You can see their combat experiences score and their post-battle experiences score, and whether they ranked low, medium, moderate, or high. Now, combat experiences were things like, have you ever experienced a firefight? Have you ever been exposed to a mortar round? Have you ever returned fire, etc.? And each one of those counted as 1 point. So you could have experienced none of those types of experiences and got a zero, or you could have experienced every single type of experience, combat experience, and gotten 15. So the female veterans in this group ranged from 0 to 11 in combat experiences. Post-battle experiences was some similar things, like have you ever been exposed to a burned out building? Have you ever been witnessed human remains or handled human remains? And again, some of them scored 0, some of them scored up to 12. So we had a bit of a range there as well. Now, here was the breakdown of their definitions of combat. There were 3 basic themes, and I wanted to look at what were their combat experiences score, what were their post-battle experiences score, and how did they define combat, and then how did they define themselves as a combat veteran. So most of the female veterans defined themselves as a combat veteran. Only 2 said, I'm not really a combat veteran. And 2 said, technically I am because I was there, but other people experienced it more than I did. And I'll get into that in a little bit. But you can look at their combat experiences score, their post-battle experiences score, and then their definition. And let me talk a little bit more about their definitions. There were 3 basic definitions that they gave for what combat is. The first one, the one that was repeated throughout most of the 9 out of the 12 interviews, was feeling threatened. Any kind of confrontation that you or your team is in danger, any kind of hostility. It doesn't lead to, you know, fire, but you can still have situations where you had to employ the rules of engagement or war. This specific instance that the veteran was referring to, nobody drew any weapons, there were no bullets exchanged, there were no mortars, there were no IEDs. It was just a very tense situation, and that was the closest to combat that she felt that she got. That was a combat situation to her. The second definition is location in a combat zone. And this is actually reiterated by the VA. The VA defines a combat veteran as someone who is deployed to a combat zone or a war zone. So if you've been there, then you're a combat veteran. So this one of the quotes from the female veterans is, if you're in a red zone, a deployment I mean, if you're just in any deployment where there's no harm or anything, just doing the daily activities, but to be aware of your surroundings at all times and of being attacked, that to me is considered combat, whether you're attacked or not. So the actual event, the situations that occurred, were not as important as the feeling of constantly being on alert. And the third one was witnessing war. So people who go outside the gate and see the fighting and see the shells and see the people blow up, things like that we did, that's combat. Blown up trucks from another convoy, people being injured from another convoy, things like that, things in rubble. So witnessing what war is like, that to them was considered combat. That's what they described when asked about their combat experience. Self-identification as a combat veteran. Most of the veterans identified themselves as combat veterans, as I mentioned, although some identified more strongly than others, as you might expect. 2 said, I'm technically a combat veteran because I deployed to a war zone, but I didn't do as much as the other people who were there, so I'm not as much of a combat veteran. So it's relative, and there's a hierarchy. The hierarchy was based on others who were more exposed to risk, so it's that feeling threatened and feeling at risk. Guys and women that are out there on patrols are at much higher risk, so you know, like I don't technically am a combat veteran, but I don't really consider myself having been in combat. So those 2 things are not exactly the same. Several female veterans that I interviewed felt very strongly about their identity as combat veterans, and they often felt that this role wasn't recognized by others or by the VA because of their gender. I've been in these situations, I've seen things, I've been exposed to things. I've seen shots fired. Just because I haven't taken a bullet myself doesn't mean I'm not a combat veteran. That was a really powerful quote that one of them shared. So now describing the combat experience. The thing that was reiterated by a lot of the combat veterans is that each experience is unique to the individual. I know what it is for me and what I'm dealing with, but what it is for somebody else is not for me to say. Even for the same individual, if they experience multiple deployments, each deployment was a different experience because they went there at a different time, they may have had a different role, they were with a different group of people. This was one female veteran who experienced more than one deployment. They were so different, it's hard to generalize. I think that if I had just gone by one experience or the other, oh, it's like this, that, or the other, but I know it can be a world apart. And these two deployments were only the space of a year or two apart, so they weren't, you know, 5 or 6 years apart. So, these are the types of combat experiences and how they broke down. So the types of combat experiences, as I mentioned, were feeling threatened, experiencing war, and witnessing war. In feeling threatened, women described feeling threatened as a general idea. Also, training foreign military members was a way that they often felt threatened. Leaving the forward operating base, being in close proximity to a firefight, being sexually harassed was part of feeling threatened, which is what they can part of the combat experience. In the experiencing section, they talked about experiencing mortars, rockets, and bombs. That was very common. Live fire or attacks, including friendly fire. If there was a miscommunication or a mistake was made, there was friendly fire situations, that is still considered combat. And improvised explosive devices, whether vehicle-borne or otherwise. And then in witnessing, they frequently described witnessing injured or killed service members or civilians. That was very profoundly affecting. Witnessing and handling human remains, witnessing an attack, and witnessing the aftermath of fighting. So here are some of the thoughts and feelings that they had. Lots of different thoughts and feelings during combat. There were some that were more common than others. Fear, as you might imagine, was a common feeling during combat. I've never been so scared in my life. Concern for others was also a high up there on the feelings. I thought of my friends. I wanted to make sure my buddies were okay. I thought of the other people in my group. I just thought of my friends. I was so scared for them. The next one was planning the next steps and following protocol. So the first three thoughts were usually, oh no, this is scary. I hope my buddies are okay. What do I do now? So planning the next steps or following protocol, following their training, was one of the next thoughts or feelings during combat. That's when I realized this is something bad, really bad happening. I can't just jump. I really got to think about my actions and the consequences of everything and check my options. So there were a couple other, those were the three main ones, but there were a few others that they described as well, including feeling calm, feeling vulnerable, feeling helpless. As we all know, that's one of the criteria for PTSD, feeling helpless in a combat situation, feeling pride that they were able to, that they were in doing something that women didn't normally do, or that they were able to do something that not everybody was able to do. Shock, that kind of goes along with the fear, shock at the situation and the reality of the situation that they're in, and anxiety. Some of them described anxiety as excitement as well. Like, I wanted to get revenge on these people. This was my opportunity. So those were the results. Here are some points that I want to make. For the first point is that perception is reality. If these women describe this situation as a combat experience, that to them is their combat experience. That's their reality, and that's what you have to work from. There is some recent research actually that describes the impact of threat appraisal on PTSD outcomes post-deployment. So they looked at whether preparedness beforehand and a few other factors beforehand had an impact on PTSD afterwards, but it was moderated by threat appraisal. So it's not so much the objective situation or the combat exposure. It's not being exposed to bullets or bombs. It's the individual threat appraisal. It's how that individual feels threatened, which makes the difference for PTSD post-deployment. So here's some things to do and not do when you're working with female veterans, especially of Iraq and Afghanistan. One, ask about the situation in which the veteran felt threatened, rather than asking about specific combat situations that you think are combat. So rather than asking about being in a firefight or something, ask about situations in which they felt threatened, because that may vary. Some female veterans described really innocuous things, such as working in a secure facility and someone leaving a door unlocked. That was a very threatening experience. Not what you would consider a traditional combat experience. second, also, allow the veteran to identify themselves as combat veteran or not. That self-identity was really important to many of the female veterans that I spoke with. And when they felt that they were not being recognized, that puts them at a disadvantage in building a relationship. Don't assume that all combat experiences involve bullets and bombs. They may involve unlocked doors or being in a threatening situation with an American or a foreign service member, being sexually harassed. Obviously, don't tell the veteran that their experiences don't count. Also, don't assume that there are gendered responses to combat threat. There were women that didn't cower and look for someone to rescue them as a white knight, and there were men who didn't always jump up and fight back right away. It's not so much the gender, it's the individual person that is making the threat appraisal and deciding what the next steps are. So let me check in real quick on some of the objectives, the two objectives that I spoke about before. Anybody want to offer an answer? Which of the following are definitions of combat described by the female veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan in this study? Anybody have an answer? I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time hearing. E? B. It's E. It's actually all of them, isn't it? Taking action against an enemy, although I didn't include that up there, many of them did describe taking an action against an enemy, although that wasn't their central definition of combat. It was frequently feeling threatened, being located in a war zone, and witnessing war. And which of the following is not listed as a combat experience by women veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan? Anyone want to hazard a guess? I'm hearing all kinds of answers. I know it's early, but y'all have had coffee, right? One answer. Okay, I'll give it to you. It's all of the above actually were listed by female veterans. Leaving the FOB, being sexually harassed, witnessing the aftermath of war, blown up trucks, etc. Mortars, bombs, and IEDs, like I said, that was very common. Live firefights, handling human remains, all of the above were listed. Okay, now I'm going to open it up to answer questions. Yes, ma'am.
Could you look at their occupation?
I got information on their occupation, but I didn't tie it in with what their experiences were. So they worked in things like finance and logistics and transportation and military police and communications. They did a lot of different jobs, and some did more than one job.
So did you have somebody in healthcare too?
There were a couple people in healthcare, yes. There was a doctor and a sort of a paramedic, an EMT.
Okay. So kind of diverse.
Mm-hmm. It was an interesting mix. Other questions? Yes, ma'am. Yes, you.
Assuming there's more detail on male veterans in terms of what they experience as combat, did you look at that and how? I know you said you had five male soldiers, but mm-hmm. That's not a very large sample.
That's true.
How does what you know about the literature in terms of self-definition or definition of combat compare for men and women? Did you have some overlap than you might expect for men?
There was a little bit of overlap. For men, the definition was more action. It was, if you took action against an enemy, that was considered combat. Or if somebody fired at you specifically, not your fire base, but they picked you out and fired at you. So it was much more action-based, but the theme of threat was still there, and the theme of location and combat zone was still there, especially for some of the male veterans who weren't in combat arms or weren't in infantry units. For them, if they were doing a job like military police or a security guard at a gate, that location in a combat zone, that was combat to them. There was another question, I think. Oh, okay. Yes, ma'am.
Did they talk anything about their training, I guess, before they got deployed? I know I've heard before from military personnel themselves that the actual training that they had, you know, at the academy,
And that they weren't adequately trained, or that they were more nervous about what they might...
Probably the fear, anxiety, the whole, you know, civilian to...
When they spoke about training, it was usually in terms of when they were in the middle of their combat situation, trying to think back and think, okay, what is my training telling me that I should be doing next? So they relied on their training frequently, but they weren't... They didn't describe being surprised by the situations that they were confronted with. So, and you're right, you bring up the threat appraisal. If they're prepared for that beforehand and they know that that situation might occur and they have training to how to deal with it, they responded a little better. They seemed a little, they responded a little better than they would if they were unprepared.
Right, because I've heard that service people are getting PTSD before going into combat. So
that anticipation.
Okay.
Other questions? Yes, ma'am.
I'm curious what your response rate was at the VA or participation rate, like how many women you had to ask before you got to work in the role, or do you think there was any selection bias in terms of who you actually got?
I'm certain that selection bias was a limitation. The difficulty was, because we're talking about combat, it can be very triggering, obviously, and I wanted to have psychological emergency backup on standby. So I required the participants to come to the VA so that there would be a backup there if there was a psychological distress. So that really limited the number of people who were able to come. I think I sent out 218 letters. I got somewhere around 40 people who said they would be able to, they wanted to come in and participate, and of those, 19 were actually able to participate. So it was limited a bit by the requirement to come to the VA. Yes, ma'am.
In Battle Walk, I worked with Jessica, she wasn't allowed to give any incentives because of the regulations of the VA. A lot of the incentives are large incentives, so for credit, she did get a fairly small sample, even by sample, just without the incentives.
Yeah. And I wasn't able to do telephone interviews either, although many of the veterans requested that because I was concerned about the psychological distress and the potential for that. Yes, ma'am.
Along those lines, so you were only looking at individuals who left the military after they returned?
Some were still in reserve components, but none were active duty at the time that I interviewed them.
Do you think that
certainly, that's going to skew their answers a little bit, especially if they've chosen to exit the military. They've chosen to exit for a reason. So, yes, I'm not saying this is applicable to all women all the time, but that's a good point. Thank you. Other questions? Yes, ma'am.
Were all the women receiving care at the VA at the
time? Only one of them wasn't. So they were receiving care for different things, but yes. Okay. Thank you very much for your time and attention.